You're listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
Hello, hello, everyone. We are back in studio. I have Rick Howick with me. We've been running through some fun technical difficulties today. You know, one of those times where you watch a movie and you see the same scene over and over again? Well, this is just about our third try.
Something about a groundhog, but okay.
So Rick Howick is the host of the Orange County Catholic Radio program here in Orange County. He has worked in Catholic education for over 20 years. And for all of our UCR graduates or current students, because I know we have a lot of them who listen, Rick is currently working toward his PhD. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I am really interested to get into your story on our next episode. So a little bit of a teaser for those who don't catch each episode of Trending. You can find it at radiotrending.com, where we'll talk a little bit about how you were on your path to being ordained. You were working in seminary, and then you converted to the Catholic faith.
A small little thing came along, yes.
And now he's got a family, wife, children. We're going to get into all of that, and we'll also address this issue of, hey, you know, I'm Catholic, but I really think the Catholic Church needs to get with the times and change its teaching on you fill in the gap. Maybe you've said it, or maybe you've heard someone say it. So we'll be talking about that on the next episode. But today I want to discuss another perspective on abortion that you probably haven't heard. And we're going to come in on that a little later. I'm sure you've heard a lot of the arguments lately, but we'll be back on that. Recently, the Illinois governor, J.B. Pritzker, actually just signed into law such an expansion of abortion in the state of Illinois, it's worse than what we're seeing in New York.
Which is hard to believe. Because, as you know, New York's was so heinous that we have now people that are involved with that whole process. There's no way that they can present themselves at communion. There's just no way.
Right.
You have walked away from faith. I can understand someone who may never have been exposed to all of the debates, but we're now at a point where everyone knows what's going on. Everyone knows this debate that's happening, and there's no way that you can't not take a side on this. And if you're Catholic, it creates a real dilemma, especially for people who have put themselves into a party that does not allow for a pro-life position.
Right.
And that's so unfortunate, because without getting into party politics a whole lot, there are people in the one party that have really made it difficult for there to be a debate, a discussion about what's going on here.
Well, and it's really interesting, because I just came back from Notre Dame University, and we had some of the top bioethicists, politicians. We had the head of Health and Human Services, Civil Rights Department. We also had the last man standing in the Democrat Party who is pro-life, and that is Dan Lipinski.
Mm-hmm.
He is the last pro-life congressman.
Isn't that a shame? I mean, just listen to what you're saying.
Right, and he spoke to how difficult it is, and this is a Catholic man, Knights of Columbus, really incredible human being that I had the opportunity to speak with.
That was the party of Kennedy. That was the party of Al Smith. This was a party that had Catholics written all over it. And so much of this issue has marched away from what the Catholic Church can honestly embrace. It's just a shame.
Our new guest, that's Rick Howick, for those who are just joining us. You know, here's the deal with the Illinois law. It's worse than New York. Why? Not only is it abortion up to birth, but it repeals all parental notification laws. Here's the deal. It shouldn't be the state or the abortion clinic that has the best interest of that child in mind. It's the parents and loved ones. So not to notify a minor's parents that she is looking at having an abortion, that's scary. There's a reason these laws have passed. Illinois.
Well, and we have it in California as well, that same law. If you present yourself as a minor to an authority in your high school and you tell them that you want to have an abortion but not notify your parents, they will not notify your parents.
You don't have to have any notification.
It's an abomination. It's very, very sad. And what's happening really is all these states that are that lean toward the abortion perspective, like Illinois, like New York, like California, they're all trying to get their laws set in stone
in their state constitution
prior to what they think may be an overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Right.
So we just had, for example, Clarence Thomas come out in a ruling just not long ago that mentioned the need to be prepared to overthrow precedents that are useless. And it's so most people who saw that thought he's talking about Roe versus Wade at some point. And of course, that is what a lot of people are thinking. If you overthrow Roe versus Wade, most of the people who are looking at this are thinking, well, then it goes back to the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, where all rights that are not otherwise described in the Constitution are reserved to the people in the states.
Right.
So abortion should go back to the states.
Now, here's the deal. Some states, prior to Roe versus Wade, most states actually had very, very intense restrictions on abortion. So
yes,
those states will automatically be pro-life states. So unless you change the law of the land in your state.
Like Illinois.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Or New York.
Well, you know what, Rick, for those just joining us, that's Rick Howick. You're listening to Trending with Timmery. Here's another expansion that Illinois is doing that New York didn't. Now physicians are not required to perform abortions. It doesn't have to be a physician.
Yeah.
Maine has also done the same thing just
recently,
this last week.
Yeah.
And not only that, but California for years, did you know this? You do not have to have a physician to perform your abortion. Not only that, Illinois now no longer requires a medical license to operate as an abortion clinic.
You know, it's so ironic because one of the arguments that was used in order to foist this whole idea about abortion being safe and legal was that we had back alley abortions being done. Mm. And these are done by people who were not prepared and not trained and not licensed. So what do we have? We now have put into law the ability to set up a
back alley abortion clinic.
Essentially, because they don't have to be licensed, which means that there's no real oversight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that for the most part, you know, without sounding over the top, for the most part, you've got people that know what they're doing because they want to make abortion available.
Right. Well, and this
but not all of them. They're not licensed.
No.
There's no oversight.
Well, and that's what's ridiculous, because even in states where it is required for them to have a license, for example, I just got back from South Bend, Indiana, and they are this week opening up an abortion clinic that for 2 years there's been a battle over a medical license. They still don't have a medical license, and guess what? They're opening anyways, because if it has to do with a woman's body, you can say any right goes, any justification. This is what we saw in Casey versus Planned Parenthood back in the early 1990s, that there can be no undue burden placed on a woman to have access to abortion.
Well, and this is where I'm of the group that's still hopeful that when Roe versus Wade is overturned, they'll go back and revisit the original intent of what the lawsuit was under Roe versus Wade, which was to recognize, basically the state of Texas had sued to recognize that an unborn child should have equal protection under the 14th Amendment, and therefore all laws should be overturned. If they don't just throw out Roe versus Wade, but they actually recognize the 14th Amendment applies, all these laws that are passed by New York and Chicago and or Illinois and California, they're all overturned, if that's the case. So we're praying for that one.
Here's a perspective on the abortion issue that I don't think a lot of people have heard. We are living in a time where sexually transmitted diseases are a public health crisis. You guys, I know people who have severe and very contagious sexually transmitted diseases. They're recommended by a doctor. You really should abstain. And if you engage in any sexual contact, you need to make sure that your partner has informed consent. Well, they're going around, they abstain for 2 months, they meet someone, they like them, they fall into bed together. And not until after they've had sex do they suddenly share the different types of contagious STDs they have.
Oh, that's horrible. But the hormones that we have in our bodies are the most powerful drug you'll ever administer.
Right.
And they're self-administered. So.
Right. So here's the deal. Rick, I don't know if you know this, but when you have an abortion procedure, just following basic guidelines, let's say back in 2012, the Geneva World Health Organization reaffirmed best practices for an abortion. And one of the things that should and needs to happen that is not happening is a pelvic exam before the abortion. I'm sorry to get really blunt with anyone who's going, ooh, gross. Well, well, if you don't do the pelvic exam, you can't examine whether or not there might be signs of an STD. Now, you might not even see the signs of an STD, but if she has an STD and you use surgical instruments going up into the uterus, you are dragging the sexually transmitted disease up further into the woman's reproductive system, therefore spreading the STD, causing increased risk of absolute infertility, scar tissue, and so much more.
Well, and as we always say, this is a magnifying glass on it, but everyone who goes into an abortion clinic comes out with one dead and one wounded. Mm-hmm. In this case, women are not being told just how wounded they're going to be
right
after their child is killed.
Right.
Because they themselves, unless they're going to have the pelvic exam, unless they're going to have these examinations for STDs, they do run the risk of having increased fertility problems, of not being able to have babies in the future. And that's only really part of the risk. You know, when we're talking about why people don't want to talk about abortion, one of the problems is that many women who have had an abortion, they looked at the abortion as being, they looked at the baby that was growing inside them as a threat, essentially, to their lifestyle, to their plans, if they're in college. And that's something that for many of them, the decision they made, they regret. They looked at it as the lesser of two evils.
That's what's heartbreaking is that abortion is now no longer, oh, it's just a blob of tissue. That's exactly what it is.
And now they're emotionally wounded for
life. For life, and physically wounded as well, unable to conceive in the future.
Timory will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Hey everyone, I'm here with Rick Halleck, who's the host of Orange County Catholic Radio, PhD candidate, studying church history, among other things.
I'm having fun.
You're having fun.
That's right.
You know, I love that. We're talking about defending your doctoral exams, going through your doctoral exams. Yeah. You're talking about, I had a blast.
Some people don't pass.
We're going to get in more into this later, because especially for those who are looking at maybe studying a higher education, it's an interesting perspective to have.
It's a lot of fun, but it's been very interesting. I had some really good training being a principal as to how to be very diplomatic because I come at certain things as a Catholic, and it is for certain that there are a number of people in my field that do not.
Right.
And so a lot of what I do is steeped in knowing what to say, when, and how.
Right.
And what not to say.
And it makes you all the better for it with regard to the new evangelization and having conversations. Because the reality is that I think a lot of our evangelizing moments need to be diplomatic, not just fact-oriented.
Well, I have a unique opportunity as well, because the way that they work the system in the UC graduate system is to have graduate students teach classes. So what you'll do is you'll have all the introductory classes. There's like 300 people in the class, and they will have one professor who's teaching the lecture with all these hundreds of people. Then they'll divide them into classes of 30, and then the graduate students will teach those. So you get that once a week, three lectures, and then one of those a week. So I get three classes a week that I teach. And every one of those, because I'm in a religious studies class, there's been an opportunity where the concept of abortion has come up.
Mm.
And I'm able to ask the question from a diplomatic perspective, from a neutral perspective, especially if we're talking about different perspectives of people's belief systems. Rather than generate a lot of heat, let's talk about a little bit of light. We kind of know where most non-Christian people are coming from. But Christian people, and this is, again, we're talking to a lot of students who've never encountered Christianity. On a lot of our college campuses. That's something that you and I might not think much about, but on our campuses, there's a lot of people who've never really encountered it.
It's predominantly secular.
I can put out there, from a Christian perspective, we look at the beginning of the combination of the two DNA structures of the sperm and the egg as the moment when you have a unique human being at its earliest stage of development.
And that's validated by science.
That's a scientific fact. And that's just simply what it is. Now, the only question is, if you are, say, a dialectic materialist person, like someone who's a Marxist, part of your thinking is there is no God, or at least God is irrelevant to all of this whole process. Okay. But if you are a Christian, you believe that human life means something sacred. And therefore, that Christian is looking at that life as being precious from the moment it's conceived. The Christian isn't trying to take away a woman's right to choose. On the contrary, the Christian is trying to protect the right for the child to live. Mm-hmm. It's the focus isn't on taking anything away from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's on trying to preserve a life.
Something.
And to get the kids to at least understand the other perspective might be the first time that they haven't heard it from an inflammatory, anti-Christian, pro-abortion perspective.
What's the response to that from the students?
Usually it's great. I've only had one comment logged in at the end of the term say he should mind his business. But
so is it that they suddenly have respect for that worldview regarding human life, or is it that they have respect and they go, wow, there's some merit to it?
I can't speak for them, but I know that I have had people raise the issue later and ask it from a secondary perspective of building on it, not contrary to.
Fabulous.
Which is encouraging to me because it means that they want to understand where people are coming from, because these kids, they're being talked to at the high school level and the college level by a lot of people who are from a non-Catholic, non-Christian perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And they never get the Christian perspective in the public school. They never get the Christian perspective at UC unless someone presents it as, here's the other side. You don't have to adopt this perspective, but at least understand where the Christian's coming from. They're not trying to take anything away. They're trying to save lives.
Mm-hmm.
From their perspective, this is something where the weakest among us are being killed. Now, if you don't believe they're real human beings, that's something you need to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But understand their perspective. That's all I do with that. And that might be the only time they ever get that seed planted, but I had this wonderful opportunity to plant that seed.
Fabulous. And I think this is such a testament to how we're called to work and whatever gifts, opportunities our Lord has placed us in to plant those seeds, as you're talking about, and to give a different perspective. Sometimes that might not mean you have a teaching moment like you have had the opportunity. It might mean you have a living moment. You know, I think of Dan Lipinski and how Congressman Daniel Lipinski and how he's talking about being a Catholic in the public sphere and how people actually don't bring up the abortion issue to him. In other words, they bring it up if they feel their conscience is being pricked. He's a daily reminder of a conscience to them. Yeah. But people do not bring it up to him if they're trying to convince him otherwise.
Well, and this is where we need to go back to our parishes and encourage our priests to be willing to talk about this.
Yeah.
We rarely, at least in most of the parishes I've been in, we rarely hear sermons that will touch on this kind of an issue. If we do, it'll be whatever the official statements are.
Right.
But what we need to understand is that there are a number of women sitting in the pews who, when they were younger, had abortions.
By the age of about 40, 1 in 4 women have had an abortion.
Which means you've got a lot of people who have a lot of pain, and the priests know this, and they're not wanting to prick that.
Right.
But that's exactly what needs to be pricked for Christ's healing to come involved.
For healing and conversion.
Well, let's not forget why we're here. This is about Jesus Christ. This is about God come as one of us to heal us, to bring us back to God. As the Father has sent me, so I send you in order to forgive sins. That means to bring about reconciliation. And that's where we need to be praying for and encouraging our priests. Don't be afraid to reach out. Don't be afraid to put into our laps the pains that we have.
And thank them when they do bring it up. I think that's also very important.
Very important.
We get enough criticism. We need to give more encouragement when things are done right.
And no, that's
so
very
important.
True.
I want to talk, that's Rick Howick. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. Many of you have seen over the last few weeks this letter and a website that was launched by over 180 CEOs saying, hey, this whole limiting access to abortion, it affects our bottom line.
Yeah, it's a commodity.
It's a commodity. But I mean, it's just...
Our women are the commodity, and we don't want them out on maternity leave.
It's so shocking. Like, they outright said, I'm quoting from this single-page document they put out, this is bad for business. And so here's the deal. They're talking about women needing to be empowered to thrive, to have comprehensive reproductive care. They talk about how it's basic and important for all. They never once say the word abortion, essentially. They use health, independence, economic stability, but never do they mention that the woman, the risk of STDs, being drawn up her reproductive tract, inability to get pregnant in the future, post-abortion syndrome, or the fact that it's killing a baby. They don't mention any of this. They essentially want wombless women. They essentially want men who are very productive and where pregnancy, maternity leave, as you say, doesn't affect their bottom line.
Yeah, this is the dirty little secret of our modern pro-abortion lifestyle.
But it's not, because this is second wave feminism. This is what second wave feminism stood for. Be freed from your bonds of fertility. No limit on education or the workplace. And so we're basically endorsing what people call bad, evil patriarchy, because here are these men, predominantly men CEOs. That's just a fact.
Well, the whole system was designed for men at the beginning.
Right.
And so the way for women to become equal was to just simply come into the same workplace.
Exactly.
But they had to come in with and leave their wombs behind.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part and parcel. Well, in the 1960s, when you had the pill come along and the promise that you could have birth control and therefore not get pregnant, well, what happens when that fails? And the failure rate on the pill or on condoms or on anything is high, which means if you're going to preach that, you have to have abortion available.
It's a fail safe.
And if you don't have that abortion available, then if women choose to take a break in order to at least raise their children long enough to either give up for adoption or to go to grandma or to a daycare.
Or to first grade, kindergarten.
That they see that as an interruption to their career, mm-hmm. their career as a worker. And they've lost sight of the fact that, I'm sorry, men and women are different.
Right.
And our successes in life are different. There's something very different about a man versus a woman,
right.
Timory. I know I'm not telling you any news. This is what your whole program is about.
Right. Well, we're losing the value. We're losing the value of women and making them cogs in a machine of production.
A male machine of production.
A male machine of production. It's so true. And here's the thing. We see that women are less happy than they've ever been. There's this infighting between the stay-at-home mom and the career-oriented mother. I mean, you see this fight and debate. There's a reason that people are so upset about abortion, because it's hitting on their deepest desires, frustration, and outright guilt at moments.
Yeah. So you've got a combination, a toxic combination of guilt, of drive, of expectation and measurement on the resume.
Right.
And a loss of the ability to be a mother.
Right.
The loss of certain maternal understandings of what success as a woman can be.
Well, and that hits on the word empowerment. I cannot stand this word, but the reality is, in talking about abortion, this is the term that's thrown around a lot. And so I finally looked it up the other day. I went, what is empowerment? It's things such as making you more confident, giving you strength, making you stronger. Well, motherhood is incredibly empowering. It shows that you can produce this human, you can care for this human, and you can continue to go on with your life along with this little human with you.
And that's what's being denied these women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what these CEOs were willing to put into writing, which was just so shocking. We want them here without their wombs, without their success, without their empowerment.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
We're back with Rick Howick. He's the host of Orange County Catholic Radio, has 20 years of experience in Catholic education, and is working toward a PhD in church history at University of California, Riverside. My parents are from there.
Oh, God.
I live there now. We grew up in the mountains. I still claim the mountain towns like Arrowhead.
Arrowhead's a beautiful place. They've got a great pizza parlor up on top of the the center they've got there.
We do. We spent many nights and evenings having our game nights there at the pizza parlor, birthday parties.
It's a great view of the lake.
Reunions. Oh, you know, I think we're the only ones with a McDonald's that has the best lake view.
And you can get there by dock.
Yes, you can feed the ducks, throw your french fries in. Yeah. Oh, the nostalgia. It was wonderful growing up there. You know, Rick, so I was talking to Father Tim Grumbach a few weeks ago on the show, and we're talking about how we've become so desensitized sometimes in terms of the media that we consume, or even just crass conversations that we're in the middle of. And he used this phrase where you sometimes have to suspend your humanity for a second in order to watch something, whether it's a high level of violence, sexuality, whatever it might be. I had one of these moments. I've been on 4 airplane flights, and I have about 15 hours of driving behind me in the last handful of days. And it was fascinating to me when I'm sitting on my first flight in the airport in San Diego, nice and early, and I see all of these, let's say 30-something-year-olds showing up, maybe for a business trip or a fun trip, I don't know, and they're congregating around me. And this baby starts to cry rather gently, not that loud, maybe cries for about 20 seconds. But within that span, a gentleman only 10 feet away from the mom and the child yells, "Gee, someone needs to get some birth control in them." And everyone pauses in his group, and it is just awkward crickets. No one says anything. No one giggles. I'm sitting right there, and I just look up with a shocked face, and I cannot believe he just said that. And as the silence continues, he then goes on to say, "Take the batteries out of that thing." So violently and loudly, and yet no one says anything. I was shocked in that moment.
Yeah, that's one of those moments where it's almost beyond the pale. There isn't much to say other than, I guess you can kind of silently say things with your eyes as you make contact with other people and make it very clear to everyone around us. We all agree that was wrong, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's, what do you say? I mean, do you engage in argument with the guy as to how can you be so crass and so cruel, and why are you such a jerk, sorry. Better word.
There's better language there that I was interested in using. You know, I sat there and it was awkward too because I was in the depths trying to get work done before my flight. And so I'm hearing it happen. And afterward, in the middle of the silence, I look up and I'm looking like, is someone going to say something? And I thought, do I say something? And I was so shocked. I didn't have a kind word to say at the moment.
I'm shocked that you had no time.
It would have been inflammatory. Yes. I couldn't think. And I think that he was so far in the direction of being anti-child, pro-contraception, nothing would have been effective.
Sometimes the only thing you have is to lift up
a prayer.
We don't know what's going on in that poor man's life.
Right.
And it's entirely possible that he just had the worst day possible. We assume that he did, and therefore we pray for him that he'd have a much better day. And maybe the only thing you can do then is minister to those who've been wounded.
Right.
Those who received the comment. I mean, what else do you do?
Well, it's interesting because the couple sitting right in front of them, you know, kind of eavesdropping. I'm guilty as charged. I'm listening. The couple is away for the weekend with these colleagues, it would appear. They have children. And, you know, other people, couples, singles start rolling in. And it was so interesting because he starts making fun of another couple. "Oh, yeah, look at John there. He's in his dad clothes. Geez, you'd think he'd be able to wear something other than dad clothes." And you could tell this poor man was just so unhappy. Anything to do with having a family, he had to criticize. Yeah.
It certainly would make you wonder what's wrong with this poor man.
Right.
What happened to him with his family, with his fatherhood, with his having a father and his being a father.
That's very true. Well, and it makes me think of Brian Sims, Representative Sims out in Pennsylvania, because I think the attitude and the crass language is very similar, a similar way of thinking.
This was the man who visited the abortion clinic protest and then tried to solicit to out some of these young women who were actually even underage.
Yeah, he was yelling at the pro-life young teenagers praying. He ended up yelling at a woman, an older woman who was praying. And he videotapes it, or videotape old school, like Snapchat, Instagram, whatever he used. It was atrocious. Yet this is where I think Father Tim used that phrase, we're suspending our humanity when we're silent sometimes in the conversations.
Well, and it's something that perhaps we need to pay closer attention to, which is why I'm sure you're bringing it up. You know, when things began to go wrong in Nazi Germany in the wake of World War I and the Great Depression, people were silent. People didn't speak up and say things. When they came to hurt the Jews, when they came to Kristallnacht, the destruction of the businesses, the Christians that were there and the rest of society, of which at that point most of society was at least nominally Christian, said nothing, or at least not vocally.
Well, I'm thinking of the brochure and the story of Sing a Little Louder, where there was a church, a Christian church, along the railway tracks where they were actually transporting Jews to the concentration camps. And you could hear the suffering of the Jews inside of these train cars. And at one point, the train breaks down and it's right in front of the church. And you hear them pleading for help, starving to death in terrible circumstances. And the congregation is encouraged to sing louder and louder. And this is where we're at. You either stand for abortion, which is looked at as a necessary evil. You remain silent, or you speak up for the life of the mother and the child.
Before I was woke to the abortion issue.
You've been working with teenagers and college students.
The word woke has been commandeered. I'm trying to take it back. So before I was awakened to the whole abortion idea, it wasn't a big deal on my radar screen. I came out of a Christian tradition, a Protestant Christian tradition, that looked at it with mixed feelings. They didn't like the idea of abortion, but they also saw that it could possibly be necessary. And in that particular church, the Presbyterian Church, it was very split in its congregation. Some congregations emphasized the pro-life message with other evangelicals. Other congregations were more on the liberal side. And when I finally had it awakened to me, it was awakened through the concept that birth control itself could be an abortifacient.
Right.
I'm thinking that, okay, I'm not causing abortions and all these other things, but in our society, we don't think about the idea that if this is a human life, if that really is the beginning of a human life, and these birth control pills are no longer stopping conception, they're merely making it impossible for a conceived egg to implant, then we're having many abortions all the time.
Right.
That's what we mean by abortifacient. That's what woke me up, was to realize we're not just killing, at that time, 35 or 40 million children in the United States after Roe versus Wade. We're talking hundreds of millions that we've never even thought about.
Yeah, because they're being killed in the earliest stages. And for those who don't know, we talk about it here on Trending sometimes, but a contraceptive such as the pill, Norplant, a number of other things can prevent sperm and egg from ever meeting.
The IUD.
Yeah, the IUD, or it can, fertilization occurs, new distinct human life, hair color, skin tone, male or female of the child, everything is present in that moment. That child on its way to implantation, or even after it's been implanted due to imbalance in hormones, cervical mucuses, a number of different things, the child's life could end after it's already started. And this is how contraceptives work. In fact, studies show that on an average, if you're taking hormonal contraception over a long period of time, continuously every 18 months, you would have it work as an abortifacient, not just a contraceptive.
Which made it so real for me that our society is killing far more people than it's bearing.
Right.
And that if we look at, this is where my history comes in. If we look at societies over time, Moloch was the god that you would sacrifice your children to amongst the sea peoples. Mm-hmm. So the Phoenicians, and then over in Carthage, which was part of it was a Phoenician colony at the time. They had a statue that they would heat hot, and I don't want to go into great detail, but you would sacrifice babies there in order to get what you want. So you would say a prayer to Moloch and ask for it, and then you take your newborn baby that frankly you didn't want anymore, and instead of exposing it like the Romans did, they'd kill it there.
Sacrifice child. Abortion isn't new.
No.
We're so
uncreative. Our societies have been doing this for, and it's almost as if our societies find a way to kill our children. God is a God of life. And the way that we rebel against God ultimately seems to be, this pattern keeps recurring, we kill our children. And that's what our society is doing now, that it's rebelling against God, which we overwhelmingly are. It's at the same time we're also opening up to new and creative ways to kill children.
Well, this is interesting. Before, it was a religious worldview often that was used to justify killing children. Today, I think abortion itself has become the religion of, I need abortion in order to achieve in life.
Yeah, and it has replaced the idea that my call is to a greater good. At least that was where they thought they were going.
Mm-hmm.
Now it shot your abortion as if it in and of itself is a sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if it's its own sickening religion.
It's one of those moments, if you are listening and we're, you know, spending three segments essentially talking about abortion, where I am challenging you guys, take a stand. Our abortion clinics are lacking people standing in front of them. Our conversations where we awkwardly giggle or remain silent need us to speak up and defend the mother and her body and her future and the child. Be against the status quo.
Timmery will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Rick Houck is in studio with me here. We are talking about abortion and the crisis and how it's related so deeply to contraception. You know, 180 CEOs saying essentially that abortion's bad for business and their bottom line. How can you not say we've gone too far? And that's what this episode's been about. But here's the thing. The Catholic world has a particular worldview that is transformative about the human person that Rick was speaking of earlier and how he presents to his college students that he teaches at UCR. But it makes us ask the question, who are we? Where do we come from? And why is life so important?
Well, and this comes to the difference between the Catholic worldview and the secular worldview. Whether you come from it a very ultra-liberal Marxist perspective where you don't believe in God, or you come at it from a more conservative perspective where you still are materialistic. It's just the focus is on who can die with the most toys wins. It's still focused on your material success in this world.
Right.
And one of the great ironies is that no matter whether you're left or right, both sides at the end have left the anthropology of God.
Right.
God created us to have a body that transcends this world. Remember, when we resurrect with Christ, we're given a new body. People forget this. They think we're, you know, we talk about the great by and people that are in heaven someday when they die. But Jesus came back with a body. He was able to cook and eat fish. It was a body that's different. It could appear and not appear, so I don't understand it. But it's a body. And we're told that we too will have bodies. Now, why is that important? Because our worldview is not just of this material world. Materialism is important not because of the physical things. On the contrary, materialism becomes important because of what God brings to it. And that goes beyond this world.
Mm-hmm. We're a body and a soul, but we're mostly a soul. And
but it's a soul animated by a body.
Right, exactly.
Which means that our anthropology is one. The word anthropology there is kind of a fancy-dancy word in a way, but it merely means our origins and who we are. Who
Where
we
do
are
we come from?
Is a body and a soul, and they're both meant to be eternal.
And if you think this question isn't important, just think about the trend of open adoptions today. There's a reason that's a trend, because intrinsically, even with having loving adoptive parents, children still want to know, who am I? Where do I come from?
Adoption is not a neutral option. This is something that I don't want to discourage adoptions in any way. On the contrary, they're fantastic. They're wonderful. They're great. The best option would be for the mother and the father to be able to raise their own child. That's the best option. The other options are not the best option, but they're often the best of all the secondary options.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we want to have relationship with our children. This is one of the reasons why men are feeling so disempowered in our society today.
Yeah.
In an abortive society, They have no power over their own children.
And I think you could say that might be why they're angry. Representative Sims, a gentleman in the airport we discussed earlier.
Well, we men, as masculine men, want to protect our children. We want to protect our family. That's our job. We provide and protect. And when we can't do that, we feel bad about ourselves. If you're going to say that you have no say in whether or not I, the woman, kill our child growing inside of us while I pretend it's not a real human being, you have emasculated the man.
Yeah. You've already devalued one of the basic desires, intrinsic values to who he is as a protector.
And that's a Christian worldview. It's a natural law worldview, too.
Yes, you don't have to
be Catholic. But it's a Christian worldview. We happen to engage the natural law worldview.
Right. Well, and this comes back to, where's your substance? The Catholic worldview is, it's who you are, not what you do. Because things can be added and taken away from you. A young woman 20 years old could be raped next week in a parking garage, and so much of whether it's her virginity or her joy might be stolen in that moment. She might suddenly be added on to. She might become pregnant. But intrinsically, who she is has incredible value, not what she does. Because ultimately, who we are is constant. Even if we fall into a coma and we're sick to the end of our life in that coma, there is value to that person.
This is where St. John Paul II made a tremendous statement, both in Miserere Cordia, his encyclical on suffering and the value of suffering, but then in how he lived out the pain and trauma of the disease he had as he died and went through the slow process of dying from a neurologically decomposing disease. And he did it with dignity. He did it publicly and he did it bravely in order to make the point, even a stricken life is a valuable life. Look at me.
Look at my suffering.
Tremendous, tremendous statement about the value of the human being.
Well, isn't that such a consistent ethic with what he taught? You look at the theology of the body, and sometimes people reduce it only to sexual morality, but the real value of the theology of the body is its human anthropology. Mm-hmm. There is a value to who you are, even in the difference of Christ coming and saying, before it was said, you know, you shall not commit adultery, but Christ says, you shall not even look at a woman lustfully. That's the difference. You have value as a man to be able to control yourself, and that woman has value to not be offended even if she's not aware of it.
We married lay people, you're newly married, so welcome to the club.
We
married lay people. We have an understanding of this if we think about it, if we get into it, that is such an important theological echo throughout all of Christianity. The end, the very end is given to us in the last couple of chapters of Revelation. Jesus comes back to marry his bride. That's us. Mm-hmm. The whole point behind God coming to us as one of us is so that God could be one with us forever, analogously like a man and a woman coming together in love with each other, and from that produces something even beyond themselves, a new life and a family that is greater than the sum of its parts. It's more than just the man and the woman and the baby. That family is something integral unto itself.
This is the good stuff. Yeah. This is why abortion, contraception, marriage matters. Because look at the joy of the gospel. It's lived out in the family. You want to know how to change the culture right now? You know what? We're going to be the people who have children and who have raised them in the faith, and they will change the culture 20 years from now.
You want to change the culture? Raise a family of God. If you have a home church family, one that takes its Catholic faith seriously, one that goes to Mass and celebrates that, one that engages with Jesus Christ in their daily life, one that at mealtimes they come together and they celebrate God's presence in their lives as a family, that's what's going to go forth into our society and change it.
That's Rick Howick. He is the host of Orange County Catholic Radio. You're listening to Trending with Timory. Timory here. You know, as we're talking about these issues, Rick, I can't help but come back to this basic understanding of family. This is what is at the heart of the culture. You know, all of us, where's our identity? We're born into a family. We start off as either a son or a daughter. We become a sibling, right? We become mothers and fathers, even if spiritually mothers and fathers, because ultimately motherhood and fatherhood is written into our body and all of our sex differences.
It's literally in our DNA.
Right.
And all of the hormones and pheromones that get involved with the whole falling in love process, it's all part of that DNA. And if everything is working normally, then you have a man and a woman set up for success in building a family and continuing the creative love of God. Mm-hmm. And that's what families do. They continue that creation that was kickstarted by God in the 6 days. And we've been continuing it ever since. Mm-hmm. And that's the echo of God in our world, and it comes through our families.
So here's the thing. This is a Catholic worldview. Some people are saying, okay, you're giving us a theology behind why we're pro-life. You don't have to talk about God, though, with someone who, let's say, is anti-religious, right? Anti-Catholic, whatever it might be. You can speak to the reality of the intrinsic value of the person. Now, maybe you don't have the opportunity for a deep anthropological conversation touching on these ideas, but you can show it by the way you treat people.
The love of God was demonstrated in Matthew 25, where the sheep and the goats are gathered together, and the one question was, when I was hungry, did you feed me? When I was thirsty, did you give me drink? Naked, did you clothe me? And that's often just confined to the social justice end of Christianity. But the money part of that is, when you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. Mm. Because there is an aspect of Christ in each one of us. Mm. That's the message. That's precious. Right.
And there is the spiritually poor as well as the material poor. And we're living in a time where spiritual poorness, just baseness to the deepest level, is what we're surrounded by. You know, I'm reading St. Alphonsus Liguori's Preparation for Death again. I really recommend people read it like once a year, because we need to keep our death in perspective. We don't talk about it enough. We really don't.
Uncomfortable.
Right. And it talks about how these people who are so hardened at one point in the book, people who are so hardened almost to the point of apathy or just outright justification for sin after sin, we're losing them. Rick, it's been wonderful having you on the show. Where can people find your radio show?
I'm at Orange County Catholic Radio. So if you go to the same website sponsored by the Diocese of Orange that Trending with Timory is on, you have two websites, one that's yours and one that is through the Diocese of Orange, occatholic.com. And you can go to the radio spot, and there's like 8 different programs that we produce here at the Great Tower of Hope here in Garden Grove, California. And mine's one of them, OC Catholic.
Fabulous. Thank you for being with us. You can also head over to radiotrending.com, where we'll have the bio for Rick Howick and links to where you can enjoy his show. If you enjoyed what you heard, send me a message. I would love to hear from you. And please go leave a review so other people can find Trending. 5 stars only, though.
Very good.
This has been Trending with Timory. To book her to speak or learn more about her guests, visit radiotrending.com. That's radiotrending.com. You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes.